1340WNBS.com presents The Neil Bradley Show.
Hello, welcome to the show. Josh Planos, Washington Post contributor, will be along. We're going to talk week two of college football and preview four of the games coming up this week. Get Josh's thoughts. Josh, he's pretty much our resident college football expert and has great insight, knows the teams, follows the teams, and kind of pick his brain a little bit about what's coming up this week. Before we do, want to get you caught up with everything going on. Both of our area golf teams in action yesterday. UT Martin, by the way, they're hosting invitationals. UT Martin, 6 under par after two rounds, and they are the leader at the MSU Invitational at Miller Memorial Golf Course here in Murray. Murray State putting two teams in the event. They have the gold squad. They hit 595. The blue team at 600. So the gold squad is at 585, excuse me. The blue team at 600. So a 15-stroke difference. Redshirt freshman Matthew Winder. Yes, that is Dave's son. He leads the gold team with a two-round score of 142. He's in 16th. Gabe Wheeler in 21st at 145. Daniel Taylor leads the blue team in 27th at 147. Green Bay's Joe Ducatow and Austin Swafford at UT Martin, the leaders after two rounds at 137. They're playing the final round today. The women's team with their invitational going on at Drake Creek. That's over in Ledbetter. Murray State is watching from down below. Western Kentucky with a two-round total 594 for the lead. Murray State 8 strokes back with the gold squad, and the blue squad further back at 614. Jane Watts of Murray State, 2 rounds at 146, and that's good enough for first play, sharing that with Western Kentucky's Mary Joyner and Georgina Blackman and Samantha Griffith of Lipscomb, the final round of that being played today. Congratulations to Murray State's Rachel Gustino, the Adidas OVC Volleyball Newcomer of the Week for the second time this season. She posted double-digit kill totals in all three matches last week for the Racers. They're off until this weekend when they take part in the Billiken invite. They'll face St. Louis, Illinois, and Omaha. High school soccer last night, Christian Adams and Connor Steele, 2 goals each. Galloway beat St. Mary 8-0. These are boys' scores. Graves over Mayfield 9-2. Lyon over Ballard 7-0. On the girls' side, Reagan Pittenger, 4 goals for Galloway County in their 8-0 win over St. Mary. Ballard and Lyon County, a 3-3 draw. And Caldwell beat Tillman 6-1. Volleyball, Murray gets a sweep at Mayfield 3-0, 25-11, 25-13, 25-15. Carlisle swept Union City. Fulton City swept Joppa, Maple Grove. Hickman County swept Lake County. Trigg took 3 of 4 from Rossview. University of Kentucky women's golf team playing at the Minnesota Invitational this week. And at 1 under par, it's former Galloway County golfer Anna Hack. She has a share of the first-round lead, helping her team to a fifth-place tie after two rounds. If Hack can win the individual title today, she'll be the first Kentucky player to do that since the 13-14 season. Hack is a sophomore. For the second straight week, Louisville quarterback Lamar Jackson is the Walter Camp National Offensive Player of the Week. Why not? In that 62-28 win over Syracuse, 610 yards from scrimmage, 199 rushing, 411 passing. He's been phenomenal. He is now the first player ever in bowl division history to pass for 400 yards and rush for 175 in the same game. Speaking of Louisville, they released their hoops schedule yesterday. They'll get North Carolina, Kentucky, Indiana, and Purdue in a schedule featuring 10 NCAA tournament teams, and they'll open their 18-game ACC schedule with the first of two meetings against Virginia December 28th. That's a week after they host Kentucky. A little different date on that. That's on the 21st. Cardinals also compete in the battle for Atlantis. November 17th, they get a home game with Long Beach State, and then they take off to the Bahamas where they'll take on Old Dominion. I'm sorry. Still bitter over the Trey Freeman buzzer beater 3 in the NIT 2 years ago. Kyle Hendricks takes a no-hitter into the ninth. Cubs beat down the Cardinals 4-1. Jeremy Hazelbaker at least kept it from being a no-hitter and a shutout when he let off the ninth inning with a solo homer. Mike Leake took the loss. It didn't pitch terribly, I guess. 9-10 overall. Jaime Garcia, good Jaime, bad Jaime. I don't know who will show up tonight. But anyhow, he goes against Jason Hamill. 7-15 first pitch airtime, 6-20. Cardinals do have Aledmys Diaz back. The 26-year-old shortstop activated off the disabled list Sunday after being out more than a month with a broken thumb. All right. And I'll take this break and be right back with Josh Planos.
It's week two of the NFL on Sports USA. The San Francisco 49ers fly east to face last year's MVP, Cam Newton, and the Carolina Panthers. Then, history is made before the ball is even kicked. The Seattle Seahawks travel south to take on the LA Rams. The NFL is back in LA for the first time in 21 seasons. It's a coast-to-coast doubleheader. Niners at Panthers, then Seahawks at Rams, right here on Sports USA.
NFL coverage begins Sunday morning at 11:30. On WOFC. Welcome back to the program. As promised, Josh Planos is my guest. A lot of college football to talk about this week. And we're going to look back at last week and a few of the games this week. But Josh, right up front, and this is one that is making a lot of buzz around here, and that is not just the Louisville Cardinals as a team. They beat Syracuse Friday night 62-28. But Lamar Jackson, with his start over the first two games, has been really head-scratchingly good. 610 yards that time out. I realize Syracuse may not be that good, but 199 rushing yards, 411 passing. All sorts of people say he's the early leader for the Heisman. A lot of hype. I know they play Florida State this week. Give me kind of your thoughts on the kind of start that Lamar Jackson has going for him at Louisville.
Well, I think there's no question that he's the front runner right now. I mean, if you look at those numbers that you just rattled off, I mean, nobody's even, you know, sniffing that kind of production. And you're right, this week it'll be his first real true test. Florida State's defense, I think, particularly in the second half of its game against Ole Miss, really showed that it's one of the better defensive units in the country. So with what he's going to be up against, this could be a really great opportunity for a Heisman moment. A solid performance in front of one of the best defensive units in the country, or it could be, kind of a crashing back to earth with him finally having to go against a defense that is, conditioned and disciplined to kind of prevent what it is that he brings to the table, which, you know, is seemingly everything. I mean, he's doing it on the ground, he's doing it in the air, he's breaking tackles, he's jumping over people. I mean, he really has developed quite a Heisman resume through 2 weeks, but you know it is just through 2 weeks, yeah. And he'll have to perform this Saturday.
Puts up 600 this week against Florida State, and people will really take notice, but I got a feeling that'll be difficult to do, but it'll be interesting to watch. Let's talk about some of the good last week, and then there were some ugly too, but the SEC sort of redeeming themselves a bit. Arkansas goes to TCU. They go double overtime and win 41-38. That was a pretty good statement win for them, Josh.
Yeah, and you know, Arkansas and Tennessee, schools like that, have really been kind of told that they're never really reaching the expectations placed upon them in preseason. So that was a really solid win for them. I think kind of a sloppy game both ways, but that's to be expected. You know, Kenny Hill's a new quarterback in that TCU system, so there were expectations that it was going to be something of a shootout. But I thought they really answered the bell. That's a big win come bowl time, and I think Arkansas is looking good. I think Tennessee had a real nice bounce-back win, particularly how they played in the second half against Virginia Tech. And, yeah, you're right. The SEC really, kind of quieted some of the doubters, which, to be fair, had every reason to be loud after what happened in week one.
They sure. What about the game at the Bristol Motor Speedway? Did you get to at least see some highlights of that, and what did you think?
I did. It seemed like the highlights were, miles away from the actual stadium, just like where Press Row was.
Yeah.
It was kind of something that I felt like the NCAA just did to be able to say they were able to do. It didn't really seem like a good idea at any point. That's a half-mile round track, even if it is considered one of the smaller tracks in NASCAR. So it was an interesting backdrop for sure. I'm not sure I would have wanted to be covering the game as a media member, but the game was interesting, and they can kind of check that off the NCAA's bucket list, I guess, moving forward.
They've played basketball on battleships. I guess they needed to do that as well. Lana, let's take a look at some of the ugly, and I was jockeying back and forth between a couple of games while I was at home early, and one of those was Clemson and Troy, just sort of head-scratching that Troy continued to hang with Clemson, waiting for Clemson to get that one burst and pull away. And it never happened. It did cost Clemson in the polls, but Clemson, as good as I thought they looked in week one, it just didn't seem to have it. So I don't know if they really had a struggle or if Troy just had a good game plan.
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit of both. I think Troy really kind of answered the bell and was not afraid of the situation and the task at hand. But at the same time, Clemson's offense has been just atrocious. And I don't think it's, it's certainly not a lack of talent. It just seems like Deshaun Watson, who is supposed to be, you know, this veteran Heisman contender, this guy who has all of this experience, is seemingly on the wrong page as, you know, that of his receivers.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, every time they break right, he's throwing left. And when they're stopping, he's throwing long. And that's, you know, usually something that you have ironed out, you know, throughout fall camp and in spring ball, you know, getting on the same page play-wise. You know, the offensive line's kind of, you know, putting him at liberty for sacks and, you know, kind of there's always seemingly a bunch of pressure on him. But the play routes, getting on the same page and same wavelength with the receivers, I think is a serious issue that they need to correct as soon as possible before conference play begins.
Well, had they lost Detroit, at least it was a bowl division team. Georgia, they came close to losing to Nicholls State. 26-24, they were able to survive, but I kept flipping over there, and they were actually lucky to get out of that with a victory. Georgia, they made mistakes. Nicholls State came up with big plays, and again, it just didn't look good for an SEC team that I'm used to seeing a lot better from on that particular day.
Yeah, unexpected regressions there. I mean, that was a really that was a team that had a great win in week one over North Carolina, a ranked North Carolina team. Nick Chubb, you know, ran wild, and you just kind of assumed that the sky was the limit, especially with how well the freshman quarterback stepped in and played, and you know, he won the starting role, and then it seemed like everything just kind of changed overnight. Defensively, I thought they did fine. I mean, giving up, you know, less than, I think, 21 points is, you know, a pretty solid effort, but offensively, it seemed like a lot of drives stalled where in week one, you saw their ability to maintain drives and to convert third downs, and that just wasn't the case, it seemed, against Nicholls State. So, you know, moving forward, I guess we'll, you know, see if they can correct that, because this was a Georgia team that I think got a lot of hype after that week one win. And after week two, I think everybody's kind of on the side of, you know, caution with this team moving forward as far as expectations.
And the ugliest, I guess we'll say, for the officials in the Central Michigan-Oklahoma State game, they will be suspended. They're not going to work, even from both conferences, as Central Michigan wins 30-27, misapplication of a rule there at the end of the ball game. But, Josh, I mean, Oklahoma State, how are they even in that spot to allow that to happen? That is beyond me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel for him, because I think that penalty or the officiating was truly atrocious, and obviously everybody I think agrees on that front. But you know, this is a home game. This is something that is supposed to be an easy stepping stone before your kind of rigorous Big 12 schedule, and yet you know this team just kind of came out flat again with a veteran quarterback like Deshaun Watson. You know, they weren't seemingly able to get on the same page defensively. I thought there were some serious issues even before that last ditch Hail Mary effort, which is probably one of the more incredible plays I've ever seen in my whole life to end a game.
Yeah.
And so I you know, I don't want to, you know, overlook that, but defensively that was such a good encapsulation of how poorly that team had played defensively throughout that game. And it's unfortunate that it shouldn't have happened, but you know, at the same time, this is a team that shouldn't have put itself in that situation. And I think if they could have had the first half back, they would have, paid a king's ransom, because what they were doing immediately out of the gate was just, it wasn't Oklahoma State football, at least, you know, the Oklahoma State that we've been accustomed to watching on Saturdays.
This week we have, there's four games I want to talk to you about, but three of them involve teams, ranked teams, playing against one another. And we'll begin with Alabama at Ole Miss, and I've seen Coach Saban really, he warns his team. He does not like how they've been playing recently against Ole Miss, so I would guess this is a very difficult week of practice for the Crimson Tide, but they have to go on the road and take on the 19th ranked team in the nation. And I saw his press conference after Western Kentucky. If you didn't know the score, I think you might have thought they lost, because he wasn't in a good mood.
Yeah, I mean, every time I see a Nick Saban blow-up reel on YouTube, I always think about when he was coaching in Miami, And there was a story, I can't remember who the player was, but he made, I believe it was a lineman cry during a practice because he was just, losing his mind and just, shrieking on the field. And we saw a little bit of that with him and Lane Kiffin, one of his own coaches this weekend, which was a curious turn of events. But yeah, I mean, he preaches, consistency and not looking at the score. And that's something that I think a lot of families and players and coaches can really buy into. If you play the right way throughout the whole game, then the score won't matter. The kicker is, the team they beat handedly. So
yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what they do with Ole Miss, who's they beat them two straight for the first time in the history of that rivalry. I think nobody's really expecting Ole Miss to pull out the win this time around because of the trauma that came from their week one loss to Florida State. But who knows? I mean, this is Chad Kelly. This is supposed to be his star-studded senior year, and I'm sure that he would like nothing more than to go out having helped the Rebels beat the Tide for the third consecutive year and get them kind of back into the national conversation.
Another terrific matchup in South Bend as Michigan State invades Notre Dame. How do you see this one?
I like Notre Dame. I really think that Michigan State hasn't really shown me a whole lot. Remember that week one win was overwhelmingly sloppy. And I think that they just lost too much from last year. I know that they've got some of their key contributors defensively back, but I like the Malik Zaire. I like what Notre Dame was able to do against Texas, even if that defense gave up a ton of points. I think Notre Dame's trending in the right direction, and I think Notre Dame knows that it can't afford another loss. So I think that they're going to want it more, and I think they've got more talent, particularly on the outside at receiver, than Michigan State can match up with.
Then Ohio State at Oklahoma. This is one where the Buckeyes, so far they look pretty good for the most part, and this is a big opportunity for Oklahoma with Ohio State coming in.
Oh, huge. I mean, Oklahoma, again, talk about a team that wants to get back into the national conversation. That deflating loss to Houston it was gut-wrenching, I think, for the Sooner fans, and nothing would ease those worries better than knocking off Urban Meyer. I think Ohio State is way too strong at way too many positions, particularly at quarterback. I think JT Barrett has been, kind of one of the most, one of the least talked about quarterbacks through 2 weeks, even though he set a school record in week one in the country. And I just think Ohio State's going to get it done. And, who knows, maybe down the road we'll have a collision course between undefeated Nebraska and undefeated Ohio State.
And that was the next one I was going to talk about. You have Oregon coming in. You'll get an up-close seat for this one. This is an Oregon team. We all know about that offense. But this is also a golden opportunity for Nebraska if they want to start garnering some votes for the top 25. Beating Oregon, especially a convincing win, would certainly help that cause.
Oh, and the conversation is deafening here, honestly. This is the one ranked opponent we host this season. And not only that, but it's a chance for Mike Riley, who I believe was 4-10 against the Ducks when he was coaching the Beavers, to kind of exercise some of those demons that seemed to kind of haunt his tenure there. I mean, he always was matched up with one of the best teams in the country as it was becoming one of the best teams in the country, and could never seem to really get it done against the Ducks. So this is a really good opportunity for both teams who, frankly, haven't really played, tough competition. What worries me most, I believe, is the jet sweep that Oregon will run and kind of run repeatedly, something Nebraska hasn't been able to defend, and now Oregon, can run it with a guy who is who finished fifth in the 110-meter hurdles at the Rio Olympics last month. So, I think that Oregon will definitely have speed on its side. They seemingly always have speed on their side. But I really think Nebraska will make enough plays late in the game to get this done, and that would be just an enormous win for this program.
Well, it'll be fun to watch. I think the game's overall better selection this week than last week with all the ranked teams playing one another. As usual, Josh, I appreciate you coming on, giving me your insight. It's always very good. Look forward to speaking with you next week.
Thanks for having me.
That is Josh Planos.